My name is Ron Burke, and this topic for this morning is the sounds of silence. Before I get into that, just a couple of remarks. First of all, I am from Texas, and I say that because I think right off the bat we should have an understanding. I won't say anything about your accent if you won't say anything about mine, okay? For some reason, I'm the one that's always getting accused of an accent, but you Minnesotans. The other thing I should say is I'm a campus pastor from Southwest Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas. This is Campus Ministry Day. Elmer Witt, I think, is still on campus ministry, even after he stole the magic marker from this morning. We campus ministers try to keep the church straight all over the United States. So, the other thing I want to say is I am from Texas, and San Marcos is very close to Austin. And Austin, for those of you who are country western fans, know that that's the center of the world as far as country western music is now concerned, and has been the home of Willie Nelson. All those Scandinavians like Willie Nelson. And he has a song where he says something, has a line in there, something like, "Be careful what you're dreaming, or your dreams will be dreaming you," which I think is very profound. Someday I'm going to preach a sermon on that. Not today. But I am today dreaming one of my dreams, or it's dreaming me. I'll be very honest and say that I'm very excited about being here today. It has been a long time dream of mine to be on the staff at Holden Village. In certain circles that I run in, that is a sign of honor and prestige. And I accept that and am very honored and excited about being here. So if I'm a little nervous or something today, that's the reason why. I'm sure it's not because I'm just cold from the weather, right? The other thing that I'd like to do before kind of each of my presentations, hopefully, is, since there is a transition time before people come in, is share some little what I call random thoughts. I do a column in the Southern District ALC paper monthly, sort of a wry eye on what's going on in the sky and so forth. And it's titled Random Thoughts. And the ordination last night reminded me of my own ordination. If I have one claim to fame, it is the fact that I'm almost positive I was the first pastor ordained in the present American Lutheran Church.
Very good.
Hold your applause. I was ordained January 8th, 1961, and the ALC came into being January 1, 1961. There was a classmate of mine, Bill Jeffs, whom some of you may know, who was ordained the same day as I was, but he was ordained in Phoenix, Arizona. And if I know anything about geography, that means that I was first, because I really don't know what that honor means, but anyway, that means I celebrated my 20th anniversary a year or so ago, and at that particular time did a little musings on that occasion, and last night caused me to remember that. And for, I don't know who all's pastors and who are lay people, but anyway, I thought I might share this little thing on, you know, you've been a pastor 20 years when. You know you've been a pastor 20 years when you can't use your old sermon notes anymore because they're written too small for you to read without your glasses, and you're still too vain to wear your glasses in the pulpit. You'll notice I put my glasses on to read that. You know you've been a pastor 20 years when you get winded during the processional. You know you've been a pastor 20 years when you sent out your ordination invitations with a 3-cent stamp. When you're not surprised at anything you hear in a counseling session. When you can remember when a skin flick was the way you got rid of a bug. You know you've been a pastor 20 years when you have put your foot in your mouth so often that Dr. Scholl is now your dentist. You find yourself listening more and talking less. Lutheran life insurance agents aren't as eager to sell you policies as they once were. You really don't like to listen to anybody preach but yourself. You know, you've been a pastor 20 years when you can remember when religious movies starred Charlton Heston instead of George Burns. You begin to realize that you're not going to save everybody, and you start concentrating on saving somebody. The full and flowing robe you receive for ordination won't button anymore. You know you've been a pastor 20 years when you can remember when the red hymnal was the new hymnal. That's for ALC and LCA people. When someone gives you an orthopedic Bible, that takes a while. The older pastors laugh at that. You know you've been a pastor 20 years when you can remember when Never on Sunday was a song and not an excuse. When you start using a large print Bible to read the lessons during worship. You know you've been a pastor 20 years when you realize you've developed an alter ego. When you look through some of your old sermons and you wonder how in the world you could have ever said that. And finally, you realize you've been a pastor 20 years when you realize that no pastor is perfect, and you are a perfect example of that. So that is in honor of the occasion which we really celebrated last night. I was just very thrilled to be involved in that. I don't know about the rest of you. But enough of that frivolity now that we have everybody here. The topic for this morning, I would like to sort of begin with a Bible verse. We Lutherans do that, you know. This is sort of the theme text from 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 11 and 12. It's a little story where Elijah is fleeing the wrath of Queen Jezebel, and he ends up in a cave in a wilderness. And this is the way the Bible records the Lord's coming to Elijah. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. Even though this is my first time to be on the staff at Holden Village, it's not my first time to be at Holden Village. About 5 years ago, the summer of 77, my wife and I, who is not here, by the way, she intended to be here, but complications at the last minute arose, and so I am here by myself. Anyway, we were here 5 years ago as a result of one of those kind of once-in-a-lifetime trips that at least we make. I'm not sure about you. We spent a week here, and that was spectacular, but we spent a week coming out here and then a week going back, and we toured all the beautiful sites of Western United States. And as you might imagine, during that time, we drove across lots of desolate stretches of highway and desert. For those of you who drove, you know, you probably went across some of those. But the most desolate stretch that we drove was from Lake Tahoe to Las Vegas. I don't know whether you've ever been across that. Don't go if you haven't. There's about two towns and three fly-in brothels. I've never figured out how they get business out there. Nevada's a very strange state. They have local option prostitution. Each county can, it's like drinking in Texas. But that's a story for another lecture. But anyway, traveling across that miles and miles of miles and miles, it suddenly dawned on me that my wife and I were literally going hours without saying anything to each other. We were just sitting there side by side in silence. And rather interestingly, it was not a threatening silence. It was a very, very comfortable silence. And that caused me to start thinking back to the beginning of our relations, some 27 years prior to that, and the kind of relationship we had then. At that particular time, boy, silence was very threatening to our relationship. We had to, make all kinds of idle conversation. We had to fill the air with words, so we chattered away about all kinds of insignificant subjects. Silence was just a very uncomfortable threat to our relationship. But now, after 27 years of marriage, our relationship has grown in security to the point where we don't need to always be talking to each other. In fact, we enjoy silence together because, I think it's safe to say, we enjoy each other's presence. And interestingly enough, I have found a comparable thing happening in my relationship to God. When I was first beginning my relationship to God, I had a great need for words, you know, vocal prayers and wordy worship and hot and heavy religious discussions. I spent very little time in silence with God. And when I did, it was terribly threatening and uncomfortable. But now, as I find myself becoming more spiritually mature, more secure in my relationship with God, I find that I do not have such a strong need for words as I once had. In fact, I get great joy and satisfaction out of just being with God in silence, just resting and relaxing in the presence of God. And out of all of this has come a whole new appreciation for and interest in the place of silence in my own personal spiritual life. So that for the last few years, I have been doing quite a bit of investigating into the subject. And this morning, I would like, as contradictory as it may sound, to talk a little bit about silence. That humorous but also wise observer of life, Woody Allen, has said, "God is silent. Now, if we can only get man to shut up." One of the reasons why we humans have such a problem shutting up may be our basic fear of silence. Henry Nouwen has observed, "For many, silence is threatening. They don't know what to do with it. If they leave the noise of the city behind and come upon a place where no cars are roaring, no ships are tooting, no trains rumbling, where there's no hum of radio or television, where no records or tapes are playing, they feel their entire body gripped by an intense unrest." There are some students, and I'm a campus pastor, and I can verify the truth of this statement. There are some students who cannot study without a solid wall of music surrounding them. If they are forced to sit in a room without the constant flow of sound, they grow very nervous. Thus, for many of us, silence has become a real disturbance. There was a time, says Nouwen, when silence was normal, and a lot of racket disturbed us. But today, noise is the normal fare, and silence, strange as it may seem, has become the real disturbance. The result is we have become alienated from silence. If we go to the beach or on a picnic in the woods, the transistor radio is often our most important companion. Perhaps we should say that we can't stand the sound of silence. End of Henry Nouwen's quote. Now, why can't we stand the sound of silence? Well, maybe it's as Frederick Buechner, another one of my favorite authors, observes, we are none of us very good at silence because it says too much. There's no question but that the sounds of silence do say a lot. Some of it may be negative, things that we don't really want to hear, things that threaten us and frighten us. But there's a lot of positive in the sounds of silence. Good things, things that can give us peace, give us comfort, give us hope, which is the theme for Holden Summer, and give us security. And one of these positive things is the fact that God, I am convinced, quite frequently speaks through silence. The Bible is just full of such references. The text which I used at the beginning tells how God speaks to Elijah, not in the roaring wind, not in the grinding earthquake, not in the crackling fire, but in the still, small voice. Or, as the original Hebrew says, the sound of a deep silence. The sound of a deep silence. And then you go on into the New Testament. And there are many of the major events of Jesus' life taking place in solitude and silence. There's that 40 days in the silent wilderness, preparing himself for his public ministry. And then after his ministry begins, we find him again and again going off to some silent and solitary place to listen to God and get strength for his mission. In fact, these times are mentioned so often that it is obvious to me that this was a regular practice of Jesus. And he encourages his followers to do the same thing, to go into their closets to pray. Ecclesiastes says there's a time for talk and a time for silence. Isaiah says, in returning and rest you shall be saved, in quietness and in trust shall be your strength. Lamentation says it is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. The Bible unquestionably, as far as I am concerned, endorses the importance of silence. And silence is no less important today. God still frequently speaks to us in his still, small voice. And sometimes the only way we can hear him is in the sounds of silence. T.S. Eliot has these lines in his poem, Ash Wednesday. Where shall the word be found? Where will the word resound? Not here. There is not enough silence. A curtain of noise can often keep us from experiencing many of the wonders of God's world. I had a beautiful example of that back in the summer of 78. I spent 6 days on a high country trail ride in the San Juan Mountains of southern Colorado, northern New Mexico. Went with a group out of Ghost Ranch, which some of you are familiar with, which is the Presbyterians' feeble attempt at Holden Village in northern New Mexico. It is a fabulous place. If you ever get the opportunity, go. Lutherans in too. But anyway, 29 of us rode horseback, or I should say 28 rode horseback. They assigned me a mule for some reason. But the story of Jasper and Ron in the Colorado Rockies is also a subject for another sermon. But anyway, we rode back about 10 miles into that wilderness, and there we made base camp at 11,500-foot Chama Lake. And then we rode out from there every day. And the scenery was breathtakingly beautiful. If you've been in the Rockies, you know that it's similar but different than the Cascades. And snow was still on the mountains there as it is here, and ice still on the lakes. But that was in the middle of July. And as we rode horseback, muleback, over 12,000 feet on the Continental Divide, I, for the first time, really felt literally what it means to be on top of the world. And on the last day of our trail ride there, it was suggested that we spend the first hour of that day on the trail riding in silence. No conversation, no words were to be spoken. And the group agreed to that proposal, and so we mounted and rode off. And even though we spent most of that time on a trail that we had ridden on every day, this time it was a totally different experience. We heard sounds that we had missed before, the trickling of melting snow, the creak of saddles, the screech of hawks, the whistling of marmots. And most surprisingly for many, we saw more than we had seen before. Now, as might be expected, we saw more wildlife as a result of our silence than we had during the previous days. But we also, I think it could be said, saw more scenery than we had seen before. Mainly because we did not have the burden of making conversation. And that freed us to devote more time to observing the world and the wonders around us. I learned the truth there of an old proverb that says, when you open the mouth, you shut the eyes. When you open the mouth, you shut the eyes. And the silence that day lifted the curtain of noise and enabled us to see a whole different side of the mountains. For many of us, that hour was the highlight of the whole week. I am convinced that God spoke to us in the sounds of silence. Thomas Merton has said, my life is a listening. God's is a speaking. My salvation is to hear and respond. And for this, my life must be silent. Hence, my silence is my salvation. Now, if silence is that important, then we need to see that we include it in our in our lives. First of all, in our private lives. John Barrymore, the famous actor of generations past, and if any of you remember him, you are dating yourself. John Barrymore once commented, in Genesis it says that it is not good for man to be alone. But sometimes it's a great relief. Ideally, each of us should have our closet, our regular place and time for silence. And for some people, that's very easy to do. There are regular times when our home is quiet, our schedule is fairly consistent, so that we can set aside regular, quiet times in our daily schedule. Others may find it a little bit harder. And you have to go seeking out a place, a quiet place. You may have to go outdoors or get on a boat or start running and jogging. I'm finding more and more of my friends who jog, that's one of the main reasons that they jog, not just for their physical health, but for their mental and emotional health as well. Maybe you'll have to find your quiet place in some hidden nook in a public building. My students find it in the study carrels in the stacks at libraries. Some of you, you may just have to do it in a church, if you can find one that's unlocked. And your schedule may be such that there are no regular times free, so you have to watch for these times and use them whenever they come along. For example, these quiet times may be when the kids are asleep, if they're ever asleep, or while you're driving. I find that a lot of people use commuting time for meditation time. While waiting for the doctor or waiting for anybody, I'm surprised at how much of my life is spent in waiting. I used to get very frustrated with that. Now I see it as a positive opportunity to be quiet and to relax and listen. Other people may find their quiet times while doing the dishes or mowing the lawn or some little laborious chore that doesn't take much mental activity. You do it, it relaxes your body, and your mind is allowed to, quote, meditate. Or it may be in the world's greatest contemplative place, the place that is in every house, and that's the bathroom. You can always go into that closet and lock the door, and for some people, for some reason, people respect that privacy. We should be thankful for that and maybe use it as the opportunity for which it is. All I'm trying to say is that for some people, busy people in our world today, quiet times and quiet places do not conveniently fit into your daily schedule and agenda, and you just have to find them and make them wherever they are. But once you find this closet, this quiet time and place, how do you use it so as to really hear God in the sounds of silence? Well, a lot of people say, I'm going to use that time for prayer. I'm going to use it for prayer. And that's fine and good. How can you say anything bad against prayer? But for many of us, our idea of prayer is talking to God. Talking to God. So we spend our prayer time mouthing a bunch of words. I have this perverse picture in my mind of God listening very attentively to our prayers, our petitions, our questions, our requests, and then just as he is ready to answer, we say amen and rush back to our busy world, leaving God, hanging in the air, all ready to answer our prayers and nobody there to listen. A very important part of prayer is listening to God. Prayer is a dialogue. We should hear just as much, if not more, than we speak in prayer. And the only way to hear is to be quiet and listen. And I will be the first to admit that learning to listen is tough. Most of us have much more training in how to listen and be with people than we do in how to listen and be with God. Our Roman Catholic brethren have the right idea when they call it a discipline. And most of we children of the 20th century are not very good at discipline. But silence is a discipline with great dividends. For the past few years, as I mentioned, I have been attempting to follow a discipline of silence with regular daily periods of silence and extended times away in silent retreats. And if I may give my testimony, that's allowable in Lutheran circles, I have been amazed at the things that have happened to me as a result of my silence and solitude in my life. One of these has been the energizing effect. I come out of these times of rest and quietness surprisingly refreshed of body and mind and spirit. In fact, overall, I don't think I have ever felt better physically, mentally, and emotionally than I have the last few years. And secondly, have been the resources that come out of these quiet times, where I used to really have to pump to find stuff to write about and speak about, you know, that old perennial pressure on preachers. Now, out of my quiet times and the accompanying journal, which I keep, which I think is very important, I find that I have more stuff to share than I have the opportunities. My creative cup literally runneth over. And thirdly, my awareness has been greatly sharpened and sensitized. These withdrawals from the world, paradoxically, make me more aware of the world. It gives me the distance to see things in perspective and then go back into that world with these newfound energies and resources and put them to use in proper places, in proper ways. I am amazed at the number of really Christian activists that I highly respect in the world today who are also contemplatives. How many of you have seen this orientation film, Excuse Me, America, with Dom Helder Camaro and Sister Teresa? And Sister Teresa herself, you know, who does all this magnificent work in Calcutta, says that she still considers herself and all the nuns in her order as contemplatives. And yet they are probably among the most activist Christians in the world. But it is out of their quiet times, their contemplative times, that they get the power and the resources to go out and be activists. And as I say, I found that to be true in my own life. So taking time out for silence and solitude has not been a waste of time for me. Instead, it's been a very profitable investment of time. I feel I'm a much better pastor, a much better person because of it. So we need private times of silence. And we also need corporate times of silence, times when we can be quiet with other people. In Texas, our campus ministries have a weekend retreat each semester, all the state ones, we come together. A couple of years ago, it was our turn to host it, so we did it over near Austin. And the theme for the weekend was an introduction to contemplation. And one of the events that we included was on the Saturday evening of that retreat, when the entire group of some 75 people walked in silence down to the shores of Lake Travis. And there we sat again in silence on the shores, the rocky shores, looked out over the lake, and watched the sunset together in silence. And the feedback we got from that little event was amazing. I don't know how many people told me that the highlight of that whole weekend, of the whole retreat, was that simple act of watching the sunset and doing it together with the whole group in silence. And that says something to me. It says that people have need for silence, especially a need for silence in community. And I think the church needs to be reminded of that. When our granddaughter was about 3 years old, yes, I am a grandfather, it's out now. When she was about 3 years old, she'd been visiting us, and she was getting ready to leave. And I said, what are you going to do when you get home? She says, I'm going to go play church. I said, play church? How do you play church? And she said, everybody sit down and be quiet. Well, that's a pretty profound statement when you stop and think about it. It's not such a bad idea. But does the church provide opportunities for everybody to sit down and be quiet? Are there regular occasions for shared silence in our church? Worship is one possibility for that shared silence. It's traditional within Lutheran circles to have times of silence before and after regular worship services. The new liturgies in the Lutheran Book of Worship have designated times of silence within them. They're not always used, but they're there. For some reason, pastors are uncomfortable with that. They think, oh, the congregation's going to think I lost my place. So they just ignore those times of silence in our worship. Silent prayer is also a very legitimate part of our tradition. I'm using that more and more in public worship. Instead of doing that long, lengthy, wordy, verbal prayer of the church, I say, let us pray in silence. All of these are opportunities for us to be silent together on a regular basis in a worship context. And then there's also the possibility of special services during the week for those who might like a time of silence or meditation and prayer with their fellow saints. And here too, services of morning, midday, or evening prayer are valid parts of our Christian heritage. Orders for such services are readily available and are just waiting to be rediscovered and put into use again. And I'm happy to hear of more and more congregations providing that kind of opportunity as a part of their regular service opportunities. And still another possibility is regular meditation groups and or contemplative retreats where people can experience and learn more about the practice of and use of silence on a deeper level. And I'm hearing, again, about more and more of those being offered, and that excites me. Henry Nouwen has commented that people are always asking him to come and speak to them, but never to come and be silent with them. Maybe we in the church need to remember that we are not just in the speaking business. We're also in the listening business. Silence is just as important a part of our ministry as our words. God spoke to Elijah in a still small voice, and I, for one, am convinced that God can still speak to us today in the sounds of silence. And that is my keynote address. Finally, I am on tape at Holden Village, I hope. And now let's do a little talking about silence. It still seems ridiculous. I'll just give you the opportunity to react to some of the things that I have said. You may agree or disagree. Yes, I think it is, and do not consider myself a professional counselor, but I understand that that's a key ingredient of being a good counselor is allowing silence and allowing the other person to fill that. Yeah. But it is terribly threatening and scary, isn't it? It really is.
When we have silent prayer in church, in the congregation, there's a terribly uneasy restlessness after the first few seconds. And I feel it myself. And it seems like it might be, you know, you say the prayer that's on your mind, and then you think, oh, I got to think of some more things to say. Oh, yeah, well, I can do this. Seems like it would be very helpful if some of the things that you said could be shared with the congregation that said prayer doesn't mean just talking, sit and listen. And I don't think we think about that.
Yeah, I think we need to prepare people for silence. If I were to come into you and say, okay, gang, we are going to be silent for the next hour, that would probably scare you. But if I said some of the things like I've said here and now said, let us be silent, hopefully, you know, that would give you something to start off from. And I'm finding that that is very true with we Protestants. When I do retreats of this nature, we Lutherans really like words. You know, it's not the word of God until it has become the word of the preacher or something. But Roman Catholics are fairly well conditioned and prepared for that. They can go off, and their idea of a retreat is really, you know, you come in on a Friday evening and you say hi, and then you're quiet until you leave on Sunday. And supposedly they have been prepared to handle that. But a bunch of Lutherans would go starkers, as they say someplace.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh,
hi. Oh, hi, G. Ooh, I get scared when voices talk to me.
Not being that voice, but another. This reminded me, Willie Unset, who climbed Everest, started Outward Bound in this country, and I don't know how many of you are acquainted with it, but they take city kids, and they take them out, and they show them a mountain, and they show them a backpack for the first time in their life, and they say, go put on a backpack and climb that mountain. And the kids look at it and say, you know, you got to be kidding. But the point is, they do it. when they came back here after one of their outward bound experiences up in the wilderness, what struck me was that the thing most of them talked about was not having climbed their first mountain, not having done all these other things for the first time. But during this period, there is what they call a 72-hour solo. And that is when each person finds his own place to settle, and for 72 hours he doesn't talk, he's furnished no food. If he gets hungry, he can find something to eat. And there's always someone within calling distance. If he gets in serious trouble, he can get help. But it was this solo that they all talked about, the thing they got the most out of, the thing that they would never forget from this experience.
I would affirm that. I've had that same experience with college students. When we go off on our retreats and giving them times of silence, like I mentioned here, in community, but we will also do usually at least an hour where they go off by themselves. It's a quiet time. And when we first start mentioning that, usually the newcomers are very uncomfortable with that. And I say, an hour? How in the world am I going to be quiet for an hour? But it has been, I think, almost universal practice that we have a tough time cutting them off in an hour. They get into it. They have a transition time that's tough. Just like in the prayer time in church. But once you get into it, time literally flies. And it's just become a part. I always ask our students, what do they want to do on a retreat before we go off? And that's always the first thing now they say. We want that hour of silence. And maybe that is something we need to honor among our youth and among ourselves when we plan things like this. That gift of silence. Yes, Wayne?
I would just affirm similar things. We've shared with some Quaker friends in their services, and of course silence is a major component to their service, and it's a beautiful moment, moments together, an extended time. Very nice. And we even were with some friends in which morning devotions were simply shared silence.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be, I'm tempted every once in a while when I'm short on a sermon or something to say, this morning, folks, we are going to have a silent service. My sermon's going to be 20 minutes of silence. But, it's the old reaction I'm afraid of. Well, the only way the minister works is, 1 hour a week. And if he doesn't preach, he hasn't done anything all week, And, that's a subtle kind of pressure that you lay people put on ministers. And if you would like a silent service sometimes, say so. Doris, you've been trying.
Well, I was just going to say, mindless activity with my hands helps me in contemplation. I guess I'm just too hyper to sit and do absolutely nothing. But I find housework, menial housework, is a real help in thinking. But I don't like to have music going on or the radio or anything, but just leave. And I think that's one disadvantage today. It's so easy to switch that radio on while you're doing housework and ironing and dishes and things like that, or even sewing. But it helps me to be doing something with my hands in it, but I want silence.
Yeah, and that is, that's true, has always been true, and it's interesting how the church has incorporated that into our activity. The rosary, we Lutherans look on that with great suspicion, but the real reason for the rosary is to give your hand something to do and to aid you in synchronizing your body and mind and soul and getting into that mood of contemplation, meditation. We can do it, as I mentioned, with washing dishes. For me, I happen to be also a rancher on the side, and going out and just doing those very physical things, which don't take a lot of mind thought, but act as a rhythm to get your body settled down into thinking. I see some of you doing needlepoint, and when I was going through kind of the crisis time, which put me into the whole contemplative area of thinking, I started needlepoint. And boy, that was tough for a macho Texan to do. I hid it from my father, man. Well, I just want you to know, when I do needlepoint, it's macho needlepoint, man. I do deer and cows. I do it. No flowers for me. Yeah, that helped. Rosie Greer, that helped. Yes?
Can you suggest some good basic guide books on the conflict, contemplative, meditative Christian?
Yeah, and I haven't looked in the library back here, but the bookstore is loaded, folks. The SRAMs, if you do not know, are contemplatives, I think they would call themselves, and they wrote a little book, John and Mary, several years ago, which was probably the first one done in Lutheran circles, called Things That Make for Peace, and has a lot of different things in it. It's basically excerpts from their journal, but it really gets into that, and it's an excellent little book. There's some over here I'm not really familiar with. There's only one book that is not here. Well, I understand it is back here. You were telling me about that? Morton Kelsey's The Other Side of Silence, which is probably the classic intellectual investigation of the whole area. It's a little heavy, but it is loaded. The other one that I feel in my own exposure to these books, and it is in the bookstore, is Richard Foster's Celebration of Discipline. He is a Quaker, and it's a fairly new book, only been out 2 or 3 years. I think it is destined to be a classic. All of Henry Nouwen's books are great. I had the good fortune of sitting with Henry Nouwen for a week in Texas, and if you've read his books, you know he's a marvelous writer. He's even more marvelous in person. He's a heavy Dutch accent, and he's a frustrated actor, and oh, he's just... and he is just... he was at Yale for like 10 years and is really probably the living authority on Christian spirituality. And he gave it all up and is now living in Lima, Peru with the poor. Contemplatives are also activists usually, and now it's a good example. Two little books, one other thing, that just as are good primers. I didn't bring them along, but one is Mark Link. It's a little book, Prayer for People Who Have Forgotten How, or something like that. But it's just very usable little book. A lot of the things that I say and will be doing here in my time here will come strictly out of that. And another little book which has meditations in it for you to use is Ed Farrell's book, Celtic Meditations. It's also over here. They're both little paperbacks and very usable. Jenny, you've been trying.
Yeah, just wanted to say silence can't be misquoted, but it can be misunderstood. And when I was growing up, the way silence was often used as a way of handling anger. Mm-hmm. I just withdraw and I become silent and don't talk to you. And I've only come to realize later in my life that silence is terribly uncomfortable for me because of that kind of a relationship. And it's been helpful to know that.
George Anderson, whom some of you know, mm-hmm. was yes, LCA, who is now... At Luther, president of Luther College, I heard him say a few years ago that silence is golden, but silence can also be yellow. Mm-hmm. That we're chicken sometimes to speak out. When we talk about silence, like every other word in our language, it has many, many angles. And when I say it, I may mean one thing, and you may hear it as a totally different thing. And that's just a problem of communication that we have to realize, yes. I see all kinds of hands. Over here has been.
Could you give a little flavor of the importance of journaling?
Yeah, let me say a little bit here. This was kind of my keynote address. As I say, I wanted to be on tape, make sure it's on tape. Be a big seller. I'm going to make my million off this tape. Right? Wednesday, the session will be on private times for public people. I'll get into the very informal, just really specific techniques and things. Journaling is one of those, and I mentioned it here. How many of you keep journals, diaries? Really quite a few. I'm amazed at that. The difference is, I understand it technically, between a diary and a journal is that a diary is a more historical daily record of one's life. I got up at 7 o'clock this morning and did this until 10:33 in the evening, which is very fine and good. A journal has some of that in it, but it also goes greatly into what you were feeling. I got up at 7 o'clock and I felt terrible. I was depressed, and these were my feelings at 7 o'clock in the morning. Really kind of an inward look at your emotions and feelings. I've been keeping a journal now about 6 years and have found it just to be a marvelous thing to do. First of all, it makes me feel like I'm a writer. And well, really, most of us, the only way to write, as somebody said, is to put the seat of the pants to the seat of the chair and start writing. And once you get started, things just really flow. And if I have any career as a writer, it's been because I was a journalist first, and not in the professional sense, but in keeping a journal. And a lot of people just think better writing than they do orally or any way else. I've heard some of you say, I like to get off and write poetry or that kind of thing. A journal is a perfect way for that. It's also a great way for me to check myself where I've been. And I usually reread my journal around the first of each year, and I'm always amazed. Somebody told me once, if you really want to know how important things are, what were you worrying about 1 year ago today? Most of us can't remember. And I look back at my journal and I'll see something that was really, really a source of great concern for me at a particular time in my life for over a week or weeks. I prayed about it, and wrestled with it. And now here, a year later, I've completely forgotten about it. If I had not put that down in my journal, I would have flat forgotten about it. Sad thing about it is I usually forget to thank God for answering that prayer as well. But the good thing for me in that has been that all things come to pass. They don't come to stay, that's an old saying. I won't take credit for that. But that, we are healed. We are taken care of. God is with us. And do you want more just practical things for a journal? This is my new journal, which got wet coming up here. Fortunately, I only put a few new pages in. But it can be just a notebook like this. It can be any form of folder. I think the nicer a journal is, the more care you will extend to it. I don't suggest just writing on scratch paper and that kind of thing. The nice thing, another thing about journaling, it doesn't have to be daily. Maybe nothing happens today if it's significant, or you were just too busy to write. You do it as you feel like it. But I would highly recommend journaling. Really would. Yes?
Somebody asked a question about what's hard about silence, and from my own experience of being very verbal as a way of building a wall of words to protect me from being too close to people who might hurt me emotionally, that was a historical issue for me. Silence was fearful because I thought I would be alone. And it was the need to hold on to people and things and sounds, because the fear of being alone was fearful early in my life and became fearful later too. And the prayer house that I go to, he keeps saying silence is the letting go of all that we cling to. But that's fearful because I have to see what I'm clinging to, and I might not want to let it go. But then someone said to me, being alone is also being all one. And I'm not alone. That was the big discovery. God is really there within, and he won't leave. But the orientation was God was outer and he might go. And then the prayer house was where I learned that God is within as well as without. So I'm more with him when I'm in silence than I was before, I think.
Good. I have a quote, I don't have it with me, but I think it's Paul Tillich who said something like, in our language, we have the word loneliness to describe the pain of being alone. But we also have the word solitude to describe the glory of being alone. You can have that, those two extremes, you know. There's nothing worse than loneliness, but there's nothing greater than being alone. Yes?
You mentioned that you had the experience where it took a crisis in your life to get you into the meditation or the quiet time and the silence, and I sort of grown with it over a number of years for some strength. My situation was almost the opposite, where for the last 11 years, Becky and I, my wife, have lived very much like you're talking about. And the last year we've inherited my two sons. And I have had no time, or have taken no time for what you would call a quiet time. So in the past 11 years, my life has been abundant with energy, has been the source of ideas, my battery for painting and so forth. And since my life hasn't had that recently, I'm now uptight, I'm frustrated right now. I'm one of the reasons that I'm here at Holden is to try to find a corner, someplace that's away from away from everything. One other thing that I want to share was that one of the things that the Lutheran service has done for me, and the fact that it's so repetitive, there is also a kind of silence that comes in the Lutheran service, because you know it so well, you can almost fly through that while being silent at the same time. So it's hard to communicate that.
Yes, and I think that's something we need to be reminded of. I have so many students especially complain about the liturgy because, you know, my mind's off somewhere else. Isn't that ridiculous? And I say, no, that's the whole purpose of a liturgy, is to create a mood of worship and receptiveness. And that rote kind of thing is by design. We're about out of time. Now, I'd just like to kind of close up with one thing, and that, I'm glad you brought that up. And I think Holden Village is the ideal spot for silence and solitude, privately and in the context of community. And I would encourage you, if you have not done that already here, to try to put that into your day. We had the faculty meeting here yesterday for the week, and this whole board was full. The agenda at Holden Village is full and overflowing. It is a smorgasbord, you know, running over. And the temptation for those of us who want to get our money's worth, you know, that's a good Northern European virtue or vice, as you may look upon it. We want to come here and we don't want to miss nothing. But there's also many paths and trees that have not been sat under, and rivers that have not been watched, and moons that are there for us to look at. I would highly encourage you to try to find in your time at Holden some time for silence and for solitude. Today is my first real working day, so I'm a little uncomfortable, but I hope, I don't know whether we can get it in this week, but I hope one of the things I'd like to do is do a silent hike, like this trail ride I mentioned. Just take some people out and kind of prepare and hike for an hour in silence. If you'd like to take a group and do that on your own, if you're afraid of being out there with the bears all by yourself. But Holden's, I cannot think of a better place for that to happen. And I would encourage you to do that. Well, I'm going to give you a minute. As my gift to you, so you can leave early. And I'm sure that next time when I hear you, will all be here on time, a minute early, since you owe me a minute, right?